Spring break is in full swing. Hordes of young people flock to places like Cancun, South Beach, and Acapulco to look for a respite from the stress and responsibility of school and work. It's part of culture familiar by now. Jello shots, mud wrestling, foam parties, and girls gone wild. In the Los Angeles Times, columnist Megan Daum wonders why so many young women seem so happy to have tequila licked from their body parts. Part of it, she writes, is the fact that there's a lot of alcohol inside their bodies as well. But another part, she says, is a belief that somehow this experience builds confidence. If you're on spring break, if you plan to go, if you made the pilgrimage back in the day, what's the appeal? Call us, 800-989-8255, email talk@npr.org, and you can join our conversation on our blog, npr.org/blogofthenation. Megan Daum's article is titled Raunch Rebranded as Confidence. She joins us now from the studios at Marketplace Productions in Los Angeles. Nice to talk to you again.
Great to be back, Neil. Thanks.
And you write that spring break, of course, has changed a great deal since Where the Boys Are.
Where the Boys Are was a movie that came out in 1960, I believe, about the spring break scene in Fort Lauderdale. So that predates me. So I'm just going by what I know. But yeah, I was prompted to write this column because there were some new statistics out from the American Medical Association. And these were numbers, I call them sort of, you know, numbers of the no-duh variety. And they were sort of along the lines of the majority of women knew other women who had felt sort of pressured or coerced into having sex on spring break because of alcohol and this sort of thing. But I had done some research into spring break myself a few years ago, and I had some sort of bigger ideas that went beyond the statistics.
Well, just looking at the statistics, 74% believe women use drinking as an excuse for outrageous behavior. 83% had friends who drank the majority of nights on spring break. 12% felt forced or pressured into sex. And no wonder, you conclude.
That's no duh. There are figures that have been floating around for a while that come from the Journal of American College Health, and those are pretty shocking. They say that on spring break, the average woman has 10 alcoholic drinks per day, and the average man consumes 18. And I have to say, given my experience, I did go down to Cancun, not as a student, as a reporter, a couple of years ago. And this is not scientific, but my observations would tell me that 10 alcoholic drinks per day clearly mean per day. And we probably aren't even going into the nighttime there with those counts. But yeah, just to answer your question, when I was asked by a magazine to go down to Cancun and kind of come up with some sort of big existential reason that women are doing this, and what I came away with after interviewing a lot of people, men and women, was that getting drunk and behaving in an overtly sexual way, sort of imitating porn stars, there are lots of games and activities that I couldn't really describe in the Los Angeles Times, and I won't go into great detail into here. But participating in these games and sort of parading oneself as hot has become a measure of preparation for adulthood. Spring break, I found, was not only a vacation from college, it was in a way the ultimate proving ground. It was like a final exam. It was more important for them to be hot than to be educated. In many cases.
I was fascinated. You found that actually young women prepared for spring break the way they would prepare for an exam.
Yeah, I heard a lot of, I was really prepared this year. I came last year, but I wasn't as hot. And this year, I have better clothes. I worked out more. You know, certain grooming rituals, which, again, I probably can't go into great detail on here, had been,
conducted.
They had sprung for these things. And, it was very much like, if I can prove to myself and others that I am sexually desirable in a very generic way, not just in a way that is, has to do with being healthy and being attractive, but in a way that takes its cues directly from the sort of porn aesthetic that really, this is a whole other conversation, but I don't think it's any secret. You know, the way that, the pop culture is sort of presenting itself visually has a lot to do with pornography. And if they can sort of adhere to those standards and prove to themselves that they are desirable, that gives them the quote-unquote confidence to be adults. And that was the word that was coming up again and again, confidence.
Confidence. I'm puzzled.
Well, it was a lot of, you know, these girls would hang around sort of in gaggles. You know, they would go down with groups of friends. And I was hearing a lot of, well, we're more confident than those other girls. And, you know, I look cute in my outfit. And so I'm confident. And I am confident enough to go up and do this strip tease. I am confident enough to do some girl-on-girl wrestling in a vat of pudding. And I'm not making that example up. I have a creative mind, but I'm not that creative. And yeah, there was it didn't have to do with being intellectually confident or, you know, sort of psychologically glued together. It had to do with how they felt about their bodies.
And Megan Dom does point out in her article, her column in the Los Angeles Times, that, of course, this does not describe everybody of this age, and that there are an awful lot of young people who don't go to Cancun or South Beach or other places, many do. And if you'd like to, if you're among them, if you've been there, if you're planning to go, if you did go in the day, what was the attraction? Was it confidence? 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. And let's begin with April. April's on the line with us from Sparks in Nevada.
Hi.
Hi.
I just wanted to call. I had a couple friends go down to Mexico for spring break a few years back, and they're both in medical school, and they happened to be on an MTV movie or whatever, and now they totally regret it. It was just kind of a really eye-opener for them that they, you know, they wanted to take all that back. So, I mean, I think a lot of girls need to think about the rest of their lives when they go down and do these things. They don't understand that, you know, my friends, now they have to face people, maybe their patients or maybe some family members that they see, maybe have recognized them for strange movies that they were in. I mean, it's really, it can change the rest of your life and the way that people see you. So it has a lot to do with self-respect, and they went down there thinking they were these hot chicks, but now they have to face it for the rest of their lives in their profession. So it can be a big downer later on.
That's interesting. Thanks very much.
You're welcome.
And April, you were never tempted to go with them?
You know what? I never felt the need for that. You know, I just don't think that's something for me.
Okay. Thanks very much.
Yeah. All right.
Bye-bye. The lasting consequences of this, besides whatever it may do to your self-esteem or your confidence, for that matter, Megan Dom, I guess that has to be factored in.
Especially in the last, say, 7 or 10 years. Spring break, like we mentioned earlier, has been going on for decades. What's happened since, you know, the advent of internet and the Girls Gone Wild culture and even, you know, MTV spring break, you know, series or specials or whatever that is that it's become a media event as well. I don't think it's possible to even adequately describe the scale that these vacations are, you know, on which they're mounted. There are thousands and thousands of people in places like Cancun or South Padre Island or, you know, Jamaica, I suppose, various islands, and there will be sound stages that are that have events going on that are sponsored by television shows and sort of, you know, the Girls Gone Wild franchise. And aside from professional productions, every single person on that beach has a camera or a camera on their cell phone. And so just the sort of the sense of constant photography and constant documentation raises the stakes considerably.
So if it happens in Cancun, it stays on YouTube for the rest of your
life.
That's
right. It no longer stays in Cancun.
Now, we're talking with Megan Dom of the Los Angeles Times. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Let's get Kay on the line. Kay's with us from Gainesville in Florida.
Hi.
Hi there.
Hi. I'm actually calling to make a comment on something I noticed while taking gender studies courses. We females have a tendency, I guess, in this sort of post-Sex in the City era, to just assume that this is what's expected. You know, I know a lot of girls my age really don't know anything except for in the past 7 to 10 years, this MTV sort of everybody needs to use their sexuality to prove themselves sort of mindset, I guess. And while, you know, that sort of thing never really appealed to me, I watch my friends who are, you know, pre-med students, actually, as per the last caller, as pre-med students, going down there just because they think that they need to use their sexuality to prove themselves.
Can we be in a post-Sex in the City world when the movie hasn't even come out yet?
That's true. I guess I mean that in the post-television sense.
Okay. I wonder, yeah. Megan Dom, what do you think?
Well, again, I mean, this idea of what is feminism and how does, quote unquote, third wave feminism assert itself sartorially or aesthetically and all those things. I mean, that's a huge conversation and probably not something we have time to get into now. But I it goes without saying that there is this notion that among women in a feminist context, that if you choose something, no matter how degrading it is, it's somehow inherently empowering just by virtue of it being a choice. You know, there's that old joke, I think it was on a Sex and the City episode where one of the characters is about to do something probably ill-advised and she says, well, I chose my choice, you know, and I think that that's become a bit of a cop-out, and I don't think that people are really thinking about what they're doing beyond just the kind of semantics of, you know, throwing this jargon around. I mean, choice is, it's just words, really.
Okay, thanks very much.
Thank you.
And where are you going for spring break this year, Kay?
Oh, I actually stayed here and wrote my thesis.
Okay.
We'll look for that on YouTube.
It's another kind of party. Yeah. Kay, thanks very much. Let's see if we can go now to Danielle. And Danielle's calling us from Tucson, Arizona.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi, how are you?
Very well, thanks.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Well, I just have kind of a counterpoint to what the guest is saying. You know, I think in our culture, a lot of people, especially young people that are just coming into college, have been, you know, sheltered or possibly, like, sexually oppressed. And so I think part of the spring break phenomenon is that kids really feel like they have the ability to go on spring break and to experiment with all the things that they feel like they're going to be judged about if they do back home. And so there is that perception that if you go down on spring break, you can really cut loose and anything goes because nobody's going to judge you for it. And I think that for a lot of people, that is what's bringing them down there because it's very liberating.
Did you hear that, Megan Dom, when you were?
That is not a point that I have thought about so much until now. I mean, I guess I would be interested to hear more about how in these universities, maybe some of these kids are feeling oppressed. I mean, my impression, and again, these are just, you know, these are my observations, and I didn't interview every single person on those beaches, but my feeling was that college, you know, sort of represented 80% of this kind of party, you know, atmosphere, and you know, you could get 300% done on spring break. The colleges and universities that tend to be most represented on vacations like these are party schools anyway, typically. You know, certainly when I was in college, no one I knew went on this kind of spring break. It just wasn't part of the culture. But yeah, I mean, maybe, you know, there might be a sort of maybe there are schools with, and I'm just speculating, maybe there are religious sort of components that are coming into play here. I don't know. But I'll have to think about that one. This caller raised something that's new to me.
Danielle, thanks very much.
Thank you.
And here's an email from Susan. Girls gone wild. What about the boys? Are these girls going wild all by themselves?
No, they're not. The boys, you know, set up an entirely different sort of, not different, but they have their own issues. I saw a lot of almost fear on the faces of some of these boys. And there's a pecking order. There's competition. I saw a stage on which there was a sort of girl on boy jello wrestling or something. And it involved depicting certain sexual positions, and the MC literally threw the guy off the stage and replaced him with a more muscular, better looking, presumably more adept at this game guy. And it was humiliating. And so I think we need to be really clear that this isn't something that's just humiliating for women. This is an equal opportunity humiliation.
And just a few seconds left, but do you hear your mother's voice in your writing just a little bit?
I hear my mother's voice in my head all the time. to some degree, I'm a bit of a, I don't know about that. We never had a conversation about spring break. It wasn't my cup of tea, but I got to give my mother credit where credit's due.
Megan Dom, thanks very much, and thanks to your mother, too.
Thanks, Neil.
Megan Dom, a columnist for the Los Angeles Times. She joined us from the studios of Marketplace Productions in Los Angeles. We have a link to her piece, Raunch is Rebranded as Confidence, in our blog at npr.org/blogofthenation. Tomorrow, it's The Political Junkie. Join our guest junkie, Matt Bai. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. I'm Neil Conan in Washington.